Here we are, Hebrews chapter 13, through the summer. Been dealing with this series called No Turning Back, as the writer of Hebrews is appealing to his church to ultimately say, hey, in light of the world around you, in light of Jesus and who Jesus is, in light of Jesus being the supreme being in the universe, don't turn back on your faith. Keep going. And when we get to chapter 13, there are several things that are taking place, but the writer starts going down and kind of topic by topic starts addressing some of the hot button issues in the life of the church for them at that day. And really just does it kind of one verse at a time. Here later in the summer, we're going to get to two verses at a time, you know, big time stuff there. But as we've been doing that, this is now our third week in Hebrews 13. And so if we back up 2 weeks, we heard a couple weeks of this idea 2 weeks ago, the idea that we are called to continue to love one another as brothers and sisters with this brotherly, sisterly love, literally to love each other across the aisle. And that even in the church sometimes we can have issues that arise, we can have things that separate us from one another, but that we're called to continue to love each other because Jesus ultimately said, the world will know you are my children by the way you love and care for one another. Okay? That was 2 weeks ago. Last week, through the guise of Father's Day, we landed on Hebrews 13, verse 2, and this idea that not only should we continue to love one another, God actually calls us to be hospitable to the stranger. Because he says that some, by being hospitable to strangers, have actually entertained angels or heavenly beings, and they didn't even know it. And so it's this idea that maybe we could start to see the face of Jesus in anybody we came across on the street, at school, at work, in our community, in our neighborhood, at the bank, that maybe even those who would put themselves up as our enemies would be those that God would call us to be hospitable towards. Well, today we land on Hebrews 13, 3. George, if you'll pop that for us up on the screen, here's what it says. So we've heard, love each other as brothers and sisters. We've heard, be hospitable to the stranger. And we land on Hebrews 13:3 today, and here's what the writer says. Again, he uses the word continue as if there's some good news for these Hebrew Christians, as if they're actually already doing it. Okay, but here we are, Hebrews 13:3. The writer says, continue to remember those in prison as if you were together with them in prison, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering. Read that one more time. Continue to remember those in prison as if you were together with them in prison, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering. I want to make a confession to you this morning. My hands-on experience with the prison system, with the jail system, with the correctional system is about that much right there. See that? Can you see that, Marcus? All the way from the back? It's not a lot. Like, I'm a big Andy Griffith fan, right? Surely every jail, every prison works that way. You hang a key on the wall and they just kind of come and go as they feel led, right? They're typically just there so they don't harm others. And if it's time to bring in the crops, then the sheriff lets them go so they can bring in the crops and then come back and finish their sentence out after the crop. That's how it works, right? I do actually have a family member right now in a state penitentiary. To my own demise, I have not visited him. I have not corresponded with him. Probably something I should do. And so when it came to today, I asked myself the question, how do I talk to a group of people, i.e. you, this congregation, about a topic for which I have pretty much zero expertise and very little hands-on knowledge? I thought the way I would probably choose to do that is by bringing up some people who actually do have some information to share with us. So I want to invite Vincent Sparrow and Jim Bostic and Brent Novak to come up and join me on the stage. Yeah, come on, don't be shy, fellas. Welcome, welcome. Jim Bostic, everyone. Brent Novak. Vincent Sparrow. Hey, here we go. I want to just spend a little bit of time chatting with these guys about a couple of different things. And I thought it was funny as I was introducing. I was like, "Hey, I want to talk. I want you to hear from some guys who have firsthand experience about prison." And then it's like you guys are up here, right? They just got out like last week. You know, they're not really. Hey, let's start down here with Jim. Take a minute, Jim, and just introduce yourself and tell us just a little bit about what's been going on in your life in regards to the topic that we're dealing with today.
Well, Amy and I, our previous church, we were friends with a family, and the husband is, you know, he just did something stupid, which I thought to myself, I've been in prison for every time I've done something stupid, I never get out. But, you know, they were our friends before he did something stupid, so I just thought that we should still continue to be friends. And so he was sentenced for 5 years. He's now in year 4 of his sentence. I'm happy to report he's at the halfway house now here in Orlando. He's working 2 part-time jobs, and he looks forward to, you know, being back home, and not only his family, but his extended family.
Great. Thank you. Introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about what you've done over the years.
I'm Brent Novak. I've been working out at the State Reception Center for about 8 years now, dealing with the men as they come through the intake process and running through the orientation process prior to being shipped out to where they fulfill the rest of their sentence.
Awesome. Same question.
I'm Vince Sparrow. I work with juvenile delinquents at the detention center on Michigan and Bumby here in Orlando, Florida for 18 years. Not currently employed there at this time, but those 18 years, I've gained a lot of experience dealing with people just like ourselves. Started out as youngsters, and they graduate and go on to your department.
You recognize any of our teens? I'm just kidding. Hey, not to stereotype, but just ask a question. This is probably best directed to Brent and Vincent. As you see people coming in, either into the prison system or to the juvenile detention center, is there a trend as it relates to demeanor, outlook on life, that kind of stuff? Do you see trends in those folks, or what kind of they're conveying with their words, their body language, their posture, their attitudes? Do you see trends around any of that?
For the juveniles, it's you know, we spoke about the hormones, and but the attitude is a cultural type thing that's going on right now, and most of them come in with that type of attitude. They have to be a thug, or you know, this big shot, or whatever it is that they're trying to be. But that's usually what you see when they first come in. It's no longer that they come in scared. That used to be the trend back probably when we were younger. But it has changed. Yeah, it's totally changed.
Brent, same question. What do you see?
At our level, it's a little bit different because we got some people that are older, and they come in scared because everything that they've known has been taken from them. Their identity is basically cut clear from them, and they become a number as opposed to a person. Some of the guys that come through second, third time through, they're slap high fives and fist daps and stuff like that, you know, to all their old buddies. But for the most part, a lot of them come through scared, not knowing what to expect, not knowing what's going on.
So that's kind of an interesting flip-flop in terms of several years ago, perhaps. Younger folks were scared, and now they're coming in more with a chip on their shoulder or whatever, and older folks coming in scared. Have you guys seen, still kind of, Brent and Vincent, have you guys seen, how have you seen this process work for the good of somebody? How have you seen folks come in scared and find help through the process, or come in with a chip on their shoulder and find redemption through the process? Have you seen that at work in the lives of people over the years?
For myself, I've seen a lot of the young guys and women that would come in 13, 14 years old, and you get to know them over the years, and you get to in some ways mentor them to where you can see the changes in them. They may not get the same support that they get at home. We're the workers there. We're the ones that's actually supporting them. And you can see a lot of the changes. You see the yes sirs and the no ma'ams and things that they should be saying versus how they would come in initially.
For us, you do see the change, and you see that a lot of people there, they have more structure to their day, so they're able to go ahead and focus on the different priorities that they need to go ahead and get accomplished throughout the day.
So the idea of structure and focus being something that's definitely a benefit?
I would say yes.
Yeah. Jim, you're in a little bit of a different situation here because you're coming in as a visitor ultimately to love on someone. Tell us a little bit about your experience in terms of walking alongside your friend through this process for the last 4 years.
Well, you kind of, what they do, at least here, I think in Central Florida, a lot of our larger prisons are actually out on the panhandle. So one of the first things they do is they move you way out on the panhandle, 7-8 hours away from your family. And since you're the sole breadwinner in the family or the main breadwinner, now your family, you know, can't afford to, you know, come see you. So there's a long period of really, you know, loneliness that I think they go through. And then I think it's just especially hard on the family that's left behind to deal with the situation of, you know, now, like for my friend, for example, his wife's basically working two jobs, almost 16 hours a day. And so, and then when you go to visit them and you see the young children coming in to see their dad, it's very discerning for them because they're not allowed to bring anything in with them. And, you know, then they have, at the end of the visit, they have to basically leave their dad. And so it's very discerning for them.
Okay. Now, I think, Vincent, you mentioned family, the idea that, that the toll that this takes on the family. And, Brent, you mentioned something earlier about what this does to families in the midst of moms wanting to see children or siblings or moms and dads, parents. What impact does this have on a family to be separated from?
I think it has a negative impact on the family structure as a whole because you can't communicate with your people like you want to. The mail takes a while. It takes about 3 to 5 days for a letter that you mail from Orlando to reach your person once it gets inside through the screening process. And the phones don't get turned on until the afternoon. So if there's any sort of communication, it's still on a structured schedule. It's not like you can pick up the phone and call home at any time.
So these guys, they're not walking around with cell phones in their pockets, receiving texts every 2 seconds?
I can't answer that question.
Okay. I can neither confirm nor deny the question.
That is against the rules.
Yeah. Jim, you mentioned the idea of kids coming in as you've been there on the ground. Share a little bit about that and in terms of what's been available for families as they come in to visit.
Well, as Brent mentioned, he works at the Central Florida Reception Center, which most of you may not even know where it's at. So it's out here actually on the B line. But, you know, in Central Florida, we couldn't possibly have a prison for, 1,500 inmates. So it's a reception center. So when you go to visit the children, of course, aren't allowed to bring anything in with them, neither are their parents. And so they're pretty much dependent on what's in their visiting, they call it the visiting place. And so when Amy and I were out there one day, their toy box is probably a 6 foot long, 3 foot wide, 6 foot high box, but it was just basically rags in the bottom of the box. And so Amy, while we were waiting on our friend to come out, said, we could take this on as a community group and really, help the visiting place out here. I mean, nobody ever thinks about, sending children's items to the visitor center. So our community group, along with Pastor Ryan and
Karen and Richard. Let me tell you, if Karen and Richard ever say they have a few books to give you, get a truck, okay? So I think they gave us 181 children's books, which, you know, when these kids go out there and they're meeting with their dad and, you know, dad wants to read them a story and there's, you know, no books to read, it's really, it's very traumatic, I think, for the kids especially. And so our church collectively, we donated so many items that we were able to give to, there's three centers out there, the Main, the East, and what's?
South.
And the South. So we collected so many items here as a church body that we were able to provide, you know, toys, books, games to, you know, not only the East Campus, but the Main Campus as well. And I know it's just a real blessing to the children, and I know it helps the dads with their recovery when they're able to just sit, act for a few hours, and just be a normal dad for a little while as best they can in a poor situation.
Right. Brent, how many are we talking at the reception center?
Currently, I think we're right under 3,000.
Okay.
So, spread across the three units.
And we're talking, what, 7 miles from here, 10 miles from here?
About nine and change.
Okay. So 3,000. Okay. Vincent, how many at the juvenile detention center?
Roughly about 150, between 150 to 200 per day. And it fluctuates, but the Orange Detention Center is the second largest detention center in the state of Florida, behind Miami-Dade. So we get an influx of youth all the time, and usually it's the same perpetrators over and over again. But once they graduate to HEM, we got another flow of youth that's coming in right behind.
Okay. And again, we're talking 10 miles from here, 8 miles from here.
Right.
Vincent, would you share anything with the congregation by way of, if there's somebody out there, God started working on their heart and said, man, I want to be able to help. I want to be able to help teens that are coming in, are cycling through the juvenile detention center. Is there something you could offer just by way of a practical route that somebody could take to bless somebody over there?
I think the biggest thing that I would say is that it's always welcome. I mean, they're always looking for people to come in and speak to the kids and stuff like that. But prior to going in, I would, you know, suggest that each person search their heart and realize that when they're going in, these kids, a lot of them are broken. They're coming from broken homes and situations that are not ideal for, you know, what you want to grow up in. And you got to also remember that, like I said about hormones and stuff, you're talking about teenagers. So these things are changing them daily and rapidly. I mean, and they're all in there together. So you may go in thinking that you're getting ready to talk to a kid that may be receptive to you, and you may see something totally different. You may see that they're more so receptive of their environment and what's going on around them. It's always good to talk to them, always good to try to reach them. But I, in my personal opinion, it's better to reach them in groups. Single, you know, just doing it one-on-one, it's pretty hard to reach them like that. But if you're going in as a church group, you know, you may get more, you may get one or two that might listen versus having nobody listen. So that's the biggest thing I would say. Just also remember that we were all the adults in here, we were teenagers at one time. And like Jim said, if he was arrested for all the stupid things that he did, he would have never got out. And it's the same with most of us. So those kids, they're coming in there for doing stupid crimes, but they're human beings. They're people, too, that come through some horrible circumstances.
Brent, same question. Ways of some God started working on somebody's heart to be a presence at the reception center, to be a blessing at the reception center. Any practical wisdom or advice?
I'd say to try to reach out to the chaplain and see if there's any way that you could to connect to the people out there, because it's hard for everybody to go to church. They have church usually 5 days a week, multiple denominations. But the chapel only holds about 225 people, tops. So you got people that are falling over, other guys just trying to get to church. They get turned away just for space. So it's hard for everybody to get an opportunity to go to church on a weekly basis.
Okay, great. Jim, parting shots?
Well, I'll just say that I've always thought that church is a hospital and not a hotel. So it's nice to come here and everybody look beautiful on Sunday, but, you know, we're all part of this larger community. So, you know, we need to help those that aren't able to help themselves sometimes.
Great. Thank you. Put your hands together to show your love for these guys up here.
Thank you all very much. You put your mics right there in the mic stands. Thanks, Pastor.
Well, as they're making their way back to their seats, I just invite you to focus up on the screen with me. Church, I think there are several ways, just as we live life, that we try to come alongside one another. And I think the word that, while it's not in the passage, I think the word that the writer's getting at in Hebrews 13:3 is this word. It's solidarity. What does it mean to live in solidarity with people? And then these two cases that the writer mentions, he's very specifically talking about those who are in prison, and he's very specifically talking about those who have been mistreated. We see solidarity today in a couple of different forms. One of the ways you may choose to live in solidarity with someone who's going through cancer, and in light of cancer, the treatments, you may shave your head in order to live in solidarity with a cancer patient who's receiving treatment that's forcing them to lose their hair as well. I know a lot of our teens for several years now, they've been going through 30-hour famine together. It's this opportunity to fast for 30 hours, and then by the time the 30 hours is over, to feel the ill effects of not having eaten for 30 hours so that we could somehow experience some type of solidarity with people around the world who don't have enough food to eat or who are malnourished. Maybe you've had the opportunity at some point in your life to go through a compassion experience or a justice experience where you were a part of a more of an experiential time where you felt the ill effects of living without shelter or living a day without shoes or being exposed to the elements around you in an attempt to live in solidarity with people who also don't have very basic needs. I was at children's camp last week, and on the very last day, this kid, very excited, came up, and he had two bags of Skittles in his hand. He had one bag that was open, and he was kind of chewing on Skittles even as he came up with his other bag of Skittles. But he came up to the speaker that had been there all week, Pastor Philip, and he came up to him and he said, "Hey, Pastor Philip," and he's kind of chewing his Skittles, and he says, "I got you a bag of Skittles." And Pastor Philip looked at the bag of Skittles, and I kid you not, he looked at the bag of the Skittles, and he goes, "Oh," he said, "thank you so much." He said, "but I actually don't eat sugary candy." And this kid kind of looked at him the way you would look at an adult if you were a kid who just said, "I don't eat sugary candy," like, "what's the matter with you?" Well, Pastor Philip's wife and son were standing right there beside him, and as Pastor Philip was turning down the sugary candy, the wife said, "Actually, I am allergic and our son is allergic. We can't eat sugary candy." And in response to that, Pastor Philip said, "You know what?" And he said, "That's why I don't eat it." He said, "I don't eat it because they can't eat it either." It's an attempt for a dad and a husband to live in solidarity with his wife and his kid and also say, because they can't enjoy sugary candy, I choose not to enjoy it either. I think the writer in Hebrews 13:3 is calling us to live in solidarity with those in prison and those who are being mistreated. I want to do two things very quickly this morning, and we're going to move towards our cards here in just a moment that should be in your seats when you came in and sat down. There's two typical interpretations of this passage as biblical writers start dealing with Hebrews 13:3. I'm going to call the first interpretation more of a narrow interpretation. And here's the deal. When we open Hebrews 13:3 and the writer says, "Remember those in prison, More than likely, he's talking about people from that church that he's writing to who have been thrown in prison because of their faith in Jesus. And so now he's saying to that local church, church, remember those who are in prison, those who used to sit here right beside you, but they're now been taken away because they professed faith in Jesus Christ. Remember them. Don't forget about them. Continue to walk beside them. But he says also, continue to remember and walk beside those who have been mistreated. And again, more than likely, the idea is that they have been mistreated because of their faith in Jesus. If you remember 3 weeks ago when we walked through all of Hebrews together, one of the things the writer says is he says, don't turn back. Some of you have had hard trials. Some of you have faced persecution. Some of you have had your property confiscated. But don't turn back. It's going to be worth it in the end. And so more than likely, the writer is saying, don't forget about those who have been thrown away or mistreated because of their faith in Jesus. Now, if you'd like to pursue that route today, you could go to thevoiceofthemartyrs.com and you can see what's happening by way of Christian persecution all around the world right now. In lots and lots and lots of countries, people who not only give their lives but also face imprisonment and torture, people who have their personal property taken from them or confiscated simply because they profess faith in Jesus Christ. But this morning, perhaps there's also a little bit of broader interpretation of this passage. The writer comes on the scene. He says, continue to remember those in prison as if you were together with them in prison, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering. There's some biblical scholarship out there that takes this passage, and while they're content to say this may be simply talking about those who are in prison for their faith, there's another element of biblical scholarship out there, though, that says, you know what? This literally means anybody, anywhere, for any reason, who finds themselves in shackles, who finds themselves in chains, who finds themselves behind bars or behind walls or bound for whatever reason, don't forget about them. Continue to remember those who were in bonds as if you were there with them. Continue to remember those who, for whatever reason, by whomever, they're being mistreated, don't forget about them. And he does this. He does this very clever thing, the writer. He uses a word here that is in the present tense, and it's what we call a present imperative. It means today, right now. Don't stop. Do this. Continue. Keep on. At it. Go. Do it right now. The writer comes on the scene. He says, do this. Continue to remember those who, for whatever reason, are in shackles. They're bound. They're behind bars. It doesn't matter why they're there. Just don't forget about them. Continue to live alongside them. Don't forget about those who have been hurt, tortured, mistreated, abused. Continue to remember them. And here's what he does. He turns both of those images on their heads when he says, remember those in prison and remember those that are being mistreated as if you yourself were the one in prison. As if you yourself were the one being mistreated. How should we treat our brothers and sisters across the aisle? We should continue to love them with brotherly love, supporting them, nurturing them, walking beside them. How should we treat the stranger? We should look them in the eye. We should engage them. We should hope to meet any needs that they may have along the way. We should show hospitality to them. We should love them. And what should we do about those in our society today who, for whatever reason, are behind bars, who, for whatever reason, are in shackles, who, for whatever reason, have been hidden away because of human trafficking and slavery, who, for whatever reason, they are in a place that has separated them from those they love. And for whatever reason, they've been abused or mistreated. How should we treat them? We should treat them as if we were the ones in that spot, in that place and the actual wording of that text is remember those who are mistreated as if that was your very body. And church, that's a tough word. That's a tough solidarity. That is bigger than simply shaving your head to walk beside a cancer patient. That's bigger than simply saying, no, I don't eat sugar candy. That's bigger than saying, yeah, for the next 30 hours, I won't put anything in the hole in my face. It's bigger than that. Because we tend to like ourselves. We tend to care for ourselves. We tend to watch out for ourselves. And the writer comes on pretty strong. He says, if anybody anywhere is in prison, if anybody anywhere is being mistreated, respond to them as if it were you. Jesus, by the end of Matthew's gospel, he tells the story about the end times. He says there's going to one day be a separation between the sheep and the goats. And he tells this parable. He says, the farmer took his place and the sheep and the goats came and he sent the goats to his right, or the sheep to his right and the goats to his left. And here's what happened. He separated the sheep from the goats. And along the way, the sheep said, well, why do we deserve all this? What did we do? Why should we be in this place of honor? And the king will say, well, I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was sick and in prison and you visited me. And then the goats on his left say, whoa, Jesus, why are we over here? Why are we with weeping and gnashing of teeth? Why have we been separated from the sheep? What's going to happen to us? And likewise, Jesus says, well, I was hungry and you didn't give me anything. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was naked and you didn't give me any clothing. I was sick and in prison and you did not come to visit me. And so the writer of Hebrews, he's not coming up with just a good moral lesson for his people. The writer of Hebrews is taking an example that Jesus gave us and asking the question, what does it mean for my people today? And likewise, 2,000 years later, I think we have to ask the question, what does it mean for us today? As the Savior says, don't forget the prisoner. Don't forget those who have been separated for whatever reason, from family, from friends, from society. Don't forget those who are being mistreated, abused, taken advantage of. In fact, respond to both of these groups as if it were you, as if it were me. Well, this morning I want to give you an opportunity to just begin to pray about what it would look like for the Lord to deal with each of our hearts. I've told you, in case you missed the last couple of Sundays, each week through this summer series, you'll come in and there'll be a card very similar to this sitting on your chair. On one side of the card, it simply has the verse or the verses that we'll be dealing with on that day, and on the back side of the card, it'll simply have one question. Today, the question is simply this: in what way, maybe it could even be said, in what ways, is God calling you to live in solidarity with the prisoner are the mistreated? In what way or in what ways is God calling you to live in solidarity with the prisoner or the mistreated? And here's the thing. I want to throw out a disclaimer. I haven't thrown this disclaimer out yet. One of the temptations that we will face this summer as we deal with very practical questions each Sunday, if we're not careful, we'll think our pastor's trying to turn us into schizophrenic Christians who are just running 100 different places, 100 different miles an hour. That's not the goal of this summer series. But I want to take you back to the first Sunday of January. The first Sunday of January of this year, we showed you a video about marriages as we were kicking off one of our marriage classes. And there was a gentleman in the video sharing his testimony, and here's what he said. He said, as a believer, you you could pick one verse out of the Bible, and if you committed your life to that one verse, you could focus in on it and be faithful to God, and that could become your life and your ministry to the world around you. You see, because by the end of the summer, it's going to be a lot. Because I'm going to be standing up here saying, hey, don't look across the aisle. Love those people. Hey, welcome the stranger. Be hospitable though. Hey, love those in prison and those who are mistreated. Hey, honor your marriage bed. And if we're not careful, I could stand up and by the end of the summer, you could be kind of going, whoa, Dwayne, you're asking me to do a whole lot of stuff. My hope would be for us today that there may be some of us in this room that in response to this question would say, you know what, Dwayne, yeah. I gotta be mindful of those who are 8 miles in this direction, who are 8 miles in that direction. I gotta be mindful of those who are in my very midst, who are mistreated, who are abused, who are maligned, who are oppressed. And I've got to treat those people and love those people as if it were me. So before Pastor Alyssa leads us, let's just take a few minutes for you to spend some time with the Lord asking that question, in what way is God calling me to live in solidarity with the prisoner or the mistreated?